The group's called the Serve America Movement. It's a 527 group out of Denver, you know, one of those political nonprofits that doesn't have to disclose its donors. They're sometimes called dark money groups. But Serve America Movement is different. They're voluntarily disclosing who's given them more than $1.4 million, and now they've come to Kansas, joining with a group here calling itself the Kansas Party of the Center to gather the 18,000 signatures they need to register as a party and field candidates. Sarah Lenti is the CEO of the Serve America Movement.
Our joint and very ambitious goal is to build a new party that will give voice to Kansans who no longer feel well represented by either the Democratic or Republican parties.
Candidates have been trying to find success outside the constraints of the two parties for a long time. Frankly, without that much success in Kansas or Missouri or really anywhere else. But is that changing? I'm Brian Ellison in for Gina Kaufman, and today on KCUR Central Standard, we're talking politics, specifically the politics of third parties and of independents. Why do we have two parties? What kind of person tries to break out of that mold? And could what once was something way out of the mainstream find legs in Kansas and Missouri this year? On the Kansas side, some folks are certainly trying. Frustration with the status quo is fueling an independent candidate for governor and that grassroots effort to form a political party. KCUR's Jim McLean has more.
Can you believe it? Thank you. Hi.
On a Sunday afternoon in late January, about a dozen people gathered in the Lawrence home of a retired KU professor. They came to hear Scott Morgan's pitch for a new political party in Kansas and maybe to sign a petition to get it on the ballot.
We are making this up as we go along. But it has been a
Morgan,
really
a lifelong Republican and veteran of several unsuccessful campaigns, says the party of Lincoln, Eisenhower, Dole, and Kassebaum no longer exists. He wants to fill the void with something he's calling the party of the center.
The middle of the road, the folks who have lives to live, who have kids to raise, who have homes to clean, who aren't zealots, but trying to get them organized to try to make our state a more functioning, a more decent place.
That appeals to Annie Stevens. She's a former Democrat from the East Coast who, after moving to Kansas, married into a family of moderate Republicans.
It's a really interesting idea, being that we are in the geographic center of the United States, to have a new party called the Party of the Center. I think it could be very exciting if it took off.
But will it? Probably not, says KU political scientist Patrick Miller.
Most voters in Kansas and elsewhere in America are quite attached to their party.
So he says it's hard to get them to break ranks. History shows it takes a charismatic leader, a powerful cause, or both.
We have not really had historically a successful third party movement at a state level or the federal level that's based on centrism.
Morgan gets it. He knows his party at the center doesn't fit with the conventional political wisdom. But he says he's talked to too many voters who felt abandoned by their parties to give up on the idea.
This is one of those things that so many people believe they want. They just don't think it's possible. They just can't get around this kind of bipolar world that we live in, that we always have these two parties and these new parties never work. They were all built around a personality, whether it's Teddy Roosevelt, whether it's Ross Perot, whether it's George Wallace. This isn't built around that. This is built around a concept of moderation.
Morgan says because independent candidate campaigns are personality-driven, they don't create a lasting alternative to the traditional parties. Greg Orman, the Johnson County businessman running for governor as an independent, also sees that as a problem.
We need to do both. Run great candidates so that we can inspire people and at the same time build the infrastructure so that other candidates can run and be successful, and this can be a long-term structural solution to our problem.
Miller, the political scientist, is still skeptical. He says it's just hard to win as an independent or third-party candidate. For starters, he says, most of the unaffiliated voters, who make up about a third of the Kansas electorate, have partisan leanings.
So, number one, how many of those can you get? Number two, even if you can own them all, you have to break off people from one of their parties.
But some, like Cal Downs, the retired KU professor who hosted the petition signing party, have already made that break. He says the independent movement is gaining steam.
I think we need more choices, and it's interesting what's happening in Wisconsin with the formation of an independent party, and other states are experimenting with things, so I just think we need a better option.
The Serve America Movement, a nonprofit organization based in Denver, is lending muscle to the independent movement, helping establish new parties in several states, including Kansas, with the eventual goal of knitting them together. Sarah Lenti is the group's director.
We're saying that we want to build a new party for a new majority from the ground up. So we're really looking at building a new party and ballot access across the 50 states.
Lenti's group has people on the ground in Kansas helping gather the 18,000 signatures needed to certify the party of the center. Once that happens, Morgan says, party leaders will recruit a slate of diverse candidates to compete for several Kansas House seats and at least one statewide office. He says there's even a chance that the party of the center will endorse Orman in the governor's race.
That was Jim McLean, and he joins us now. He's a reporter at KCUR and managing director of the Kansas News Service, the collaboration that gave us that report. Hi, Jim.
Hey, hi, Brian.
Good to have you here.
Hey, thanks.
Also giving us perspective from the other side of the state line is Jason Rosenbaum, who covers politics and government for St. Louis Public Radio. Jason, hello.
Thank you for having me on.
Always good to talk to you, Jason. And in a little while, we'll also be joined by a national expert on political parties and the past and the present of these issues. But let's start here at home. Jim, Kansas does have a prominent statewide candidate trying to succeed non-traditionally, not part of a third party, but running as an independent, Greg Orman. I want to talk about both of those things, but let's start with Greg Orman. He's an independent. Who is this guy?
Well, Greg Orman is a successful Johnson County businessman, several businesses. He's been very successful. He's also not a neophyte to politics. You may remember that he ran...
just 2 years ago.
He mounted a successful challenge. A successful challenge to U.S. Senator Pat Roberts, the longtime Republican incumbent in Kansas. And the Democratic candidate in that race dropped out, kind of clearing the way for Orman to have at it. And it was a pretty good race right until the very end. And then literally millions of dollars poured into Kansas from national Republican interests. And Pat Roberts kind of won the race going away by about 10 points.
But we didn't know that till election night.
That's right. It really was a last minute thing.
You mentioned in your story that we just heard that's to win in this sort of situation requires either a charismatic leader or a powerful cause.
Mm-hmm.
Do voters have that in Greg Orman?
Well, it remains to be seen. That's kind of the cliche in any political discussion. But I wouldn't say that he's a charismatic leader. He's an interesting guy, has a lot of money, has an easy personality, and certainly kind of slid into politics in a way that seemed like a little bit of a natural fit to him. But he does not hit the cause as it exists, potentially, either for the party of the center that we heard about or for Greg Orman. The cause is the frustration that voters feel with the traditional system, whether it be the parties themselves, the dysfunction of government that we hear so much about, that narrative that we hear repeated over and over and over again, coupled this year with the dysfunction at the national level, which, of course, is kind of a daily soap opera that's playing out in D.C., all those factors could contribute to some sort of critical mass this year.
And yet, this didn't really emerge out of thin air in Kansas.
Right.
I mean, Orman, of course, was a few years ago, but even then, it wasn't really new. There's something about Kansas that has been a little bit more of a cultivator for maybe this third way.
Right. It's kind of it's a slow political boil, if you will. In Kansas, traditionally a very Republican state, but it was a certain type of Republicanism dating back to William Ellen White and Teddy Roosevelt, the progressives, and that whole era in the early part of the 20th century. And that's what characterized Kansas Republican politics. It was, to some extent, socially liberal, but very fiscally conservative, way out in front on issues like mental health and education and those kinds of things over the years. And then that slowly started to give way in the 90s. A guy named David Miller, who was in the state legislature for years, who ran for governor, he challenged Bill Graves in the 90s in the Republican primary. And he was a very conservative guy. And he was a very bright guy, and he literally took over the Kansas Republican Party at the grassroots, at the precinct level. So that happened, but then the conservatives didn't have any real success at the electoral level until Sam Brownback was elected governor, and then they held the governor's office, and in a couple of years, a purge of the Senate, they held the Senate and the House as well. And so that has effectively created three real political parties in Kansas.
Right. Essentially a divided Republican Party.
Very much so.
Mm-hmm. Which we have to explore what's unique about that. But let's switch over to the Missouri side for a second, where the situation really is very different. Jason Rosenbaum, has Missouri been a place where third party or where an independent candidate has ever really gained any ground?
Certainly not on a statewide level. Missouri is a very party-centric, party-organized state. It has been for decades, if not centuries. And there hasn't been an opening in any significant statewide contest in modern history where a third-party candidate has broken through. There are instances, though, where on local levels, especially in the city of St. Louis, that in quote-unquote independents can sometimes win under very specific circumstances. We just had an aldermanic race in St. Louis where the Democratic nominee was chosen by the St. Louis Democratic Central Committee. There was disagreement over who should be that nominee, so the person that didn't win ran as an independent and won. But for all intents and purposes, this person that won is a Democrat. So it's not really a situation where they're trying to create an entirely new party. They sometimes have to run as independents because the process doesn't work out for them.
Now, the exception to the rule you're describing is what's happening right now with Kansas City Attorney Craig O'Dear, who is running as an independent for the United States Senate in Missouri. What do we know about him?
Well, at this point, I'm not really sure you can say that's an exception. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've read about him like 5 or 6 times in the Kansas City Star, but I haven't gotten any sense of whether he's going to like pour $20 or $30 or $40 million into his campaign. And if he doesn't, he's going to get totally lost in the shuffle between Claire McCaskill and Josh Hawley, who each are going to have $50 to $60 million spent on their behalf. And if I know that's kind of an arbitrary number, but if you don't have enough money to break through that deluge of cash to get on the air, then people aren't going to know that you're even running.
Right.
So I'm not really sure. I'm not trying to impugn his candidacy, and I'm not trying to say that he can't run as an independent, but I've yet to see any evidence that he's going to mount the campaign he needs to run
right.
to be relevant in this race.
I agree with your assessment. I think what I meant by an exception was not so much that he had a better chance, but that he was not necessarily emerging as a disgruntled or unsuccessful candidate out of one of the other two
right.
parties.
Understood.
Jim, I mean, do you see that as a key difference with how this movement is shaping up in Kansas toward forming a third party?
Yeah, as we know, Kansas and Missouri, very different states in a lot of ways, but certainly politically. What I think you see on the Republican side, you hear Scott Morgan actually articulate this, is that he feels like the Republican Party in Kansas has left him and left him with no other option but to plow this new ground. And it's interesting, too, Tim Owens, who's a former state senator from the Johnson County area, who was one of those defeated in 2012. Governor Brownback ran a slate of conservative candidates, pushed out about eight Kansas state senators who were perceived to be moderates. Tim was one of them. Well, Tim is now serving as Greg Orman's, the treasurer of his campaign. So I think that this third-party movement in Kansas is largely centered around disaffected moderate Republicans, hoping then to pick up a bunch of unaffiliated votes and hoping that the Democratic candidate is a weak nominee.
And so, let's talk about Scott Morgan for a second,
okay.
who you talk about in that piece. I remember having him here in this studio mm-hmm. For a debate before that Secretary of State race that he lost to Chris Kobach in the mm-hmm. Republican
2014.
Primary.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to say, I don't want to say he knew he was going to lose. He was running with seriousness, but it was he was running against the incumbent, Chris Kobach. I mean, he knew, and there was almost a certain resignation to that, but at the same time a sense that he was doing this out of a conviction.
Right.
What is it that drives candidates in, especially through these years when there has not been any likelihood of success, to stay at it and to run this way?
Well, I'm not sure how much you can generalize. I can speak specifically to Scott. I mean, he was tilting windmills, political windmills for sure, and I think he did know that. I think this is the last thing he had to try before he could just bolt the party and try this party of the center idea. He had to give it the good old college try to see if there was an opportunity in a volatile political year to make the case for returning to what he calls traditional Kansas Republican politics. And he saw no better way to do that than to take on Chris Kobach head-to-head. Chris Kobach, of course, is now running for governor, and he's well-known nationally. And, you know, he is making it no... He's not ambiguous at all. He's running as the full-throttle conservative in this gubernatorial race, and he makes no apologies about it. So Scott had run for Congress previously in a couple of other races, but again, I think he was running against Kobach to say, okay, I'm going to give this one more shot to see if the Republican Party, in his mind, was salvageable. He determined that it wasn't, and so now he's charting this other course.
But Jason Rosenbaum, on the Missouri side, there are people who feel that way about the parties in Missouri. There are people who look at the Republican Party, which has generally dominated at the legislative level and now dominates on the statewide office level as well, but also at the Democrats, and say, I really can't find myself myself there. These mm-hmm. these parties don't represent me. Why has there not been a more plausible or more organized effort to find a space for that voter, Jason?
Because members who might sympathize with some of the third party's ideological aims typically just join one of the major parties in sort of a coalition type environment. A great example of this is I would contend there's a pretty substantial amount of Republican voters who would probably identify as libertarian leaning. Mm-hmm. The best evidence I could say is I've gone to at least two or three Ron Paul presidential rallies, and there were hundreds of people there. Now, it's clear by the fact that there's that much enthusiasm for kind of the gold standard of Republican libertarianism that there are enough to people to at least fill a room and make a difference. But I don't know if they have decided that they want to form their own party. Their feeling is we can be more effective by joining one of the big parties and trying to influence them. It's kind of similar on the Democratic side, where there may be, you know, very left of center activists and voters who may like the Green Party, for example. But they don't they feel like they would make better headway by trying to influence the Democratic platform and policy within the Democratic Party, as opposed to trying to beef up the Green Party of Missouri. And those third parties certainly exist. They just don't exist in robust enough numbers to make a difference in an election right now.
That's Jason Rosenbaum of St. Louis Public Radio. Jim McLean of KCUR is with us. We'll put all of this in perspective and find out how Kansas and Missouri fit into the national picture. To whatever extent candidates have been successful, why was that? And is this their moment? I'm Brian Ellison. You're listening to KCUR's Central Standard. This is KCUR Central Standard. I'm Brian Ellison, in for Gina Kaufman, and today we're talking about third parties and independent runs for office in this turbulent political time. We've got Jason Rosenbaum of St. Louis Public Radio and Jim McLean of KCUR's Kansas News Service here. We're also joined this morning by Skype by John Aldrich. He's a university professor of political science at Duke. Good morning, John.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on.
We're really glad to have you. And you wrote a book called Why Parties? So I'm going to make that my first question to you. Why parties? Why do we have two parties anyway?
So we've had the parties. It's a very difficult thing to win not just one election, but many elections, to be able to get control of a legislature and so forth. And it takes organization. It takes money. It takes a lot of people. And pulling that all together, not just for one election, but for many elections, just requires an organization. So that's where parties get their origination.
But if two big national groups could do that, surely a third one could.
So there's two reasons why we have two parties. This is kind of symmetric, I realize. Nice to have two reasons for that.
Sure.
One of them is that our electoral system tends to encourage focusing on one winner with two contestants competing for that office, with the fear that any third party, you're just wasting your votes that will never count for a third party because they'll never win, but one of the existing two parties will. The second reason is that once the two parties got in power, they have spent 100 years building it up so that it's very difficult for a third party to get on. It's hard to get on the ballot. You need it as a third party. It's hard to raise money. It's hard to find quality candidates. And once you're elected, if you were elected as a third party candidate, you'd find yourself in, say, a legislature in which you're alone. The legislature will be organized by the parties. You'll tend to be cut out unless you caucus, as they call it, with the party, which is what Bernie Sanders did for a very long, most of his career. He was elected as an independent, but he participated in the Senate as a Democrat in most important matters.
So much so that he then ran for president as not as an independent, but as a Democrat.
Exactly right.
So, I mean, is this an historical accident? I've always heard that the founders warned against political parties, even as they were basically founding them.
That's correct. Yes, yes. From Washington, Jefferson, Adams, Hamilton, all of the founding fathers, almost all the founding fathers, said we should avoid political parties. And yet Jefferson and Madison, Adams and Hamilton were the founders of our first two political parties. Mm-hmm. Exactly right. And that established a tradition that has been essentially the entire history has been fear of organizing about parties, and then the discovery of the necessity to have some organization and working with parties.
And yet, we didn't always have these two political parties. They evolved somewhat over time. What is it that brought about change in sort of fundamental architecture of the political structure?
So what? Yes, that's correct. Originally, we had. You can trace the Democratic Party more or less back to Jefferson and Madison, although it's evolved considerably. But the Republican Party, came in the 1850s as a brand new party to become the second major party. A lot of that was the expansion of the electorate, the growth of the country to the, in this case, spreading out towards the coasts, gave an opportunity for a party to form. It was sort of ironic, the Republican Party replaced something called the Whig Party, which had been part of the two-party system that had sort of set up all the rules to make it hard for a third party to come. And almost upon doing so, they fell apart and Republicans were able to pick up the pieces and become a new party.
Well, let's talk for a minute about the third parties, or I guess they'd be the third and fourth and fifth and sixth parties in the country these days. Do you have something they do have something of a following. You've got parties like the Green Party, the Libertarians. What is the base of these groups? It doesn't strike me that these groups are like the one that we've been talking about here in Kansas, trying to find the center. They are representing something different.
Yes. Most of the third parties that have had a modest success in our history have been like the Greens and the Libertarians, coming in from feeling that the Democratic Party was not liberal enough on the Green Party issues, the Republican Party was not conservative enough on the Libertarian concerns. And so they've been from the outside. Here is a case of a party trying to come up in the middle. And the reason that's done is in part because the success of the thinking and the pushing of the Greens and Libertarians have been part of many reasons that have pushed our two parties farther apart, leaving the middle open in a way that's been more open than in most of our history.
Yeah. Well, I want to bring our callers into the conversation, and I want to ask, have you ever supported a third party or an independent candidate? Are you maybe supporting one now in Kansas or Missouri? Tell us why, and do you have any hesitations about doing it? Give us a call. We're at 816-235-2888. What are your thoughts about the role that these candidates play in an election, maybe even in a close election? 816-235-2888. Jim McLean and Jason Rosenbaum, I want to ask both of you, can you think of candidates in Kansas and Missouri who, although they didn't win, who were outside the normal two-party structure, actually did make a mark, actually have some kind of impact in a maybe outside even a city election, Jim?
Well, I trying to do that inventory in my mind real quickly, my mind really goes back to Ormond, I think, is the best example. Not necessarily in this campaign, that remains to be seen, of course, but his challenge of Pat Roberts. And he was very smart about it in the sense that he engineered the exit of the Democratic candidate, as I said before, to clear the field for him. So it really was a test case. folks in the Democratic Party were making it known that that's who Democrats should vote for, and he was clearly going after the unaffiliated voters, trying to exploit the frustration with the Brownback administration, the tax cuts, and the financial problems in Topeka, even though he was running for the U.S. Senate. Mm-hmm. And so I think he had I think that had quite a profound impact and suggested to a whole group of people that it wasn't outside the realm of possibility because he came close.
Though he, in fact, had to get the Democrat out of the race to have that kind of impact.
He did.
Jason, on the Missouri side, and I'm going to just be honest with you, I have a hard time thinking of folks who I think really did have a significant impact. Can you think of some who did?
No, yeah. Honestly, I can't. But I will tell you, I will provide this example. In 2012, the Libertarian candidate for the U.S. Senate, Jonathan Dine, got like 5 or 6% of the vote. But there was a reason for that. Todd Akin was also on the ballot, and a lot of Republicans throughout the state had a tough time voting for Claire McCaskill, but didn't want to vote for Todd Akin. Therefore, Dine ended up getting a larger percentage of the vote than usual. And that could actually be significant. If you get above, I think, 2% of the vote in a statewide election, it means that your third party can automatically be on the ballot in Missouri. That happened with the Green Party in 2016. And in races that are very, very, very close, if there is a third party, it could end up making a difference in the outcome. But nothing on the level of Orman, especially on a statewide level.
Jim?
Let me toss one more name at you, Brian. That is Charles Koch. He is.
Yes, I've heard of the Koch brothers.
Yeah, of course, he hasn't run for office himself, but he's been tremendously influential both on the national political scene and, of course, at the state level. And he is kind of the godfather of libertarian Republican politics. And so he has had a great deal of influence in terms of the reshaping of the Kansas Republican Party and the Brownback win in 2010. And then I think that helped hasten the split in the Republican Party that has now resulted in both Orman's candidacy and the Party of the Center movement.
You know, John Aldrich, when you think of third party candidates who had any measure of success in national elections, actually, you don't think of third party candidates. You think of independents. You think of folks like Ross Perot in 92 or John Anderson back in 1980. Is there something different about people who run as an independent and the politics at play there versus with one of these minor parties?
Well, yes, the independent candidate obviously focuses on the person rather than the positions of the candidates. Another person you might think of, though, is Ralph Nader in the Green Party.
Sure, Ralph Nader.
He had a very small vote, but it was concentrated in areas that could have cost Al Gore the election. And he was running as a Green Party candidate rather than as an independent candidate.
Well, and actually, so raising Ralph Nader gets us to one of the real questions a lot of folks ask. They're asking it about Greg Orman in Kansas right now, is what about the possibility that a third party candidate or an independent candidate can, quote unquote, spoil the election for someone? Peeling away just enough votes from the candidate who is more ideologically similar to them among the two party candidates, and then cost that person the election, that it seems like that runs counter to their goals. It seems like there's something dangerous about running for office if you might cause your own views to suffer in the long run as a result. John, I mean, why would candidates keep doing this?
Yes. Well, so they have a long-term perspective and hope that by spoiling, they can be recognized as a serious contender to build into the future. That's correct. But you take people from the outside of the parties, more extreme than their parties, they're the spoilers. Ross Perot ran as something in between Bush and Clinton, and he drew largely equally from both parties. So he got lots of votes, but didn't really spoil the election for either one of them.
Yeah, historians still argue about that, right? Greg Orman in Kansas, Jim, he has heard a lot of criticism.
He has, and he bristles every time he hears it. And he looks at the He looks scientifically at the voter breakdown, the number of unaffiliated voters in Kansas and so forth. But as we said in the piece, Patrick Miller, the political scientist at KU, said that there really is no such thing as a truly unaffiliated voter. Most unaffiliated voters have partisan leanings of one way or another. I'd be interested in John's view of that, too. But, you know, we're talking about third-party candidates and independent movements and so forth. You know, I'm just curious as to where John would place Donald Trump in that regard. He ran as a Republican, but there are a lot of people who contend that, you know, he essentially, it was a coup. That he took over the Republican Party, that he's not a Republican in any way, shape, or form, and he essentially is an independent candidate who appropriated a political party.
There's a lot to be said to that. Let me just say one thing about the unaffiliated voters. It's true that most of them lean one way or the other. Those who don't are also the hardest to get to vote.
Yeah.
That's the second problem of it. To getting to Donald Trump, he started off his campaign largely unknown. We still have difficulty figuring out where he actually stands on a variety of issues because he had A, not been in politics very much, and B, had taken Democratic positions and Republican positions, liberal positions and conservative positions the few he took before the campaign. So he was hard to pin down. That's why so many Republicans running against him were concerned that he would expropriate the party, and it turns out he has.
And yet,
in many respects,
President Trump also demonstrates something that is interesting to me about outsider candidates, which is once they win, once they're elected, they are now the insiders. So now you can't speak of President Trump as an outsider. He, in fact, is the face of his party. He is the he defines okay. what the Republican Party uh-huh. believes now because he's the president. I mean, is there an irony in the fact that the very idea of running for office is that you become part of the institution? It seems like it throws a wrench in this anti-institutional idea that a lot of independent candidates run on.
Right. You have to run as an anti-party, not as an anti-government. It's hard to run as a opposed to passing legislation into law and writing laws. So that's – and what Trump found out was that he has a lot of liberty in some ways of taking positions, but if he wants to get anything passed through Congress, he has to take primarily Republican positions.
You know,
so he became a conservative Republican in many of the things that required domestic policy.
Yeah. I want to ask Jason Rosenbaum, who covers Missouri politics. And I know this race was over here on this side of the state, Jason, but I think about last November and the special Senate race in the Lee's Summit area. House Majority Leader Mike Searpoy, at the time he was House Majority Leader, a Republican running in a somewhat split but a conservative-leaning district, appeared to be in pretty sound shape against the very well-organized Democrat Hillary Shields. And then by petition, Jacob Turk, who Kansas City area voters know well as a perennial Republican congressional candidate, pops into the race as an independent. And suddenly there was this worry again of a spoiler. Now, as we know, it's now Senator Searpoy, and he's running for reelection. But I guess my question is, do you think there still is a way for those independent candidates to play that spoiler role?
If Turk had raised more money, then I think that he probably would have had a bigger impact. Turk has run so many times for that Cleaver seat that I initially thought that it wasn't out of the realm of possibility that Searpoy would come in first and Turk would come in second. Obviously, I don't know the area well enough to actually that analysis was clearly wrong, but you know. I think Searpoy ended up winning that race by 8 or 10 percentage points. So there was certainly that threat that Turk could have been a spoiler given his name recognition, but he didn't have the organizational or financial ability to really just be more than just a guy on the ballot, so to speak. So and actually, it is very difficult for like even an independent candidate in that instance to win a state Senate seat just because it's a bigger race. There's more voters. It has actually happened, though, on House-level races, state-House-level races. But again, it's kind of that scenario where the independent is really the dominant party in that district, either a Democrat or a Republican who didn't get the special election nomination. And they usually typically are a Democrat who has to be an independent for one term before they run as a Democrat or Republican again.
Have any of you ever heard of a candidate expressing regret or apology for having swayed an election away from the major party candidate that they would have preferred?
I've not heard that. I have not heard that. Although, you know, I wonder if Ralph Nader in his private moments has any regrets at all about that relative to, back to John's point. But to your earlier question, Brian, about why do independent candidates persist when it seems to be so difficult for them to break through? Well, a couple of things. One, and I'd be interested in John's reaction to this as well. But, you know, these are competitive people. They have egos. They're ambitious. That's why they're in politics, right? And you have guys like Greg Orman, who has conquered the business world to one extent or another. I mean, he's been successful, right? He sees this as a new frontier personally for him. Plus, I think he had a partisan split in terms of his parents. And so I think he comes by some of these beliefs honestly, and I think he feels the frustration emanating from voters. And I there's always this sense, you hear it in politics all the time, it's a matter of timing, the right time. And I think Greg Orman is convinced that he's the right guy at the right time, and there's the right set of circumstances that he's going to be the one who can do this. And that's what motivates him.
All right. Well, coming up, we're going to try to get into the head of those candidates. Is Jim right? Is this about their ego, or are policy convictions really driving these candidates completely? We'll ask whether 2018 is different enough from the past that maybe something could really change with our two-party system this time around. We'll find out. I'm Brian Ellison, KCUR Central Standard. We'll be right back. Welcome back to KCUR Central Standard. I'm Brian Ellison. Will 2018 be the year that independent or third-party candidates find their voice and find themselves in office? That's a question we're asking today. We're doing that with John Aldrich, a political scientist at Duke, who joins us by Skype, as well as Jason Rosenbaum of St. Louis Public Radio and KCUR's Jim McLean of our Kansas News Service. We're talking about it with you, too. Join the conversation at 816-235-2888. Would you ever vote for a Green Party or a Libertarian or a Constitution Party or a Socialist or an Independent candidate? Or maybe you have. We want to hear why or why not. Call us at 816-235-2888. I do want to ask John Aldrich. It seems to me that a lot of independent candidates we see, certainly on the national level, without the funding of a major party, you pretty much have to be rich to do this. Is that a fair assessment?
It certainly helps a lot. This is one of the reasons that there has been talk, and even he's considered, is Michael Bloomberg running more or less as a sort of centrist candidate. Billions he has.
Well, raises a question of how, yes, they are independent, but that puts them in a particular category with a certain set of concerns, right?
Yes. So generally, if you're independent, it means you tend to be in the center. And it's just hard to get a base of support equivalent to the two parties out of militant moderates. Moderates just aren't militantly moderate.
Well, and that militant moderate, it almost suggests that maybe they are not deep in their convictions, right? So it's not like a Green Party candidate, a Jill Stein, or for that matter, a Libertarian Party candidate. Jim McLean, you raised the specter of this being more ego-driven than policy-driven in some cases. Why is that not unappealing to voters? Because these candidates do get a large following.
Well, I don't mean that in a pejorative sense at all. I mean, politicians, by the nature of our system, have to have a certain level of ambition, or they would get eaten alive and wouldn't succeed. And certainly we see plenty of ambition in the White House these days, and I think President Trump's supporters really appreciate that about him. So, yeah, you know, ambition is just kind of baked into the American system too. We enjoy good, healthy competition and think that that produces good results in terms of the outcome. But in terms of the ego, again, and I think John has a very good point there in terms of militant moderates. Scott Morgan, I think, is the anti-ego person in this case. I think this has really generated on a point of principle for him, and he isn't trying to personalize this to him. He wants a grassroots movement, and that's exactly what he's hoping will occur in Kansas, is to rouse militant moderates. And he's thinking that while that may not be possible anyplace else, that is in the Kansas tradition, so he's thinking it's possible here. But most people looking on from the outside think he's got an awfully tough road to make that happen.
Jason Rosenbaum in Missouri, I don't know if we've had a true militant moderate, but one has to think that the Democratic nominee for governor 2 years ago, Chris Koster, was pretty close to that definition, a former Republican who became a Democrat, seemed to check down the line all the issues that would make him a moderate Democrat, and yet he fell short.
Yeah, I would say that there are states where there is this divide within the Republican Party between conservatives and moderates. Illinois is a great example. My former congressman, Mark Kirk, ended up being a U.S. senator who supported abortion rights, supported gun control, and supported LGBT rights as a Republican. I often joke that if Kirk ran in Missouri, he would be the Democratic nominee for governor or U.S. senator, because there's no way that the Missouri Republican Party would accept a nominee for any statewide office who supported abortion rights. It just wouldn't happen. So you have more of the moderate-ish political figures tend to be part of this coalition within the Missouri Democratic Party, especially in rural Missouri, where Democrats tend to be strongly for labor unions. They want more social services spending, especially on Medicaid. But many Democrats there oppose abortion rights and oppose gun control. So there seems to be a dichotomy like that among the Republican Party in other states, as I mentioned. In Missouri, especially if you're a somewhat more conservative person, but you are strongly in favor of organized labor power,
yeah,
and you tend to be, I guess, at least supportive of abortion rights, you'll probably more likely or not be a Democrat rather than a Republican.
You know, I want to ask you, Jim McLean, about something. Just before the 2016 elections, we talked on this program with some candidates who were regarded as long shots. Most of them were members of the major parties, but we did speak with Alan LaPolice, who you may remember had dropped out of the Republican primary for the Kansas 1st Congressional District, mm-hmm, and was running as an independent by that time. And he told me that he was motivated by convictions about the way the system simply was not working. Here's what he said.
The gerrymandering of the districts have made them so safe that they don't need to speak to the centrists or to the people that don't agree with them. They can just really go after their base, and they can push that to the extreme and get those primary voters, and then they don't have to be accountable to anybody else in the general. And that's wrong. That's absolutely wrong.
Jim McLean, he was really upset about that.
And he makes a very good point, and that's exactly what I wanted to mention. And going back to something you said earlier, the structure of our politics has a lot to do with this, and that can be different in every state. And there really is no place, if you have a race, a congressional race, or even a state senate race, and in some cases state house races, between a conservative and a moderate in Kansas, let's take the bigger races, state senate and congressional races, it's unlikely the moderate's going to win that race because of the way the primaries are constructed in Kansas. They're not open primaries, and it really obviates against a moderate Republican winning, particularly in these U.S. Senate and statewide races and so forth. And say, I think that's what Kris Kobach is banking on in this gubernatorial race. So the structure, I mean, how primary structure in particular is immensely important. And I think that is what has led both to Orman and Scott Morgan thinking that they have to create a different path because they can't succeed within the Republican Party structure as it exists here in Kansas right now.
Yeah, I mean, John Aldrich, I think that sense of maybe outrage is too inflammatory a word, but a sense of gross injustice about the way the system is set up does seem to motivate people to run for office in the first place, and in some cases to run as independents.
Yes, and it seems to be a real focus on gerrymandering, although it's only one of the many things that skews elections towards the two parties. And it very well may be that will be resolved, at least to the most extreme versions of it, by the Supreme Court.
Jason Rosenbaum, do you detect that what outlet does that? I'm just going to ask if you detect that outrage, but I know you do. My question is, what outlet does it find in Missouri if it isn't finding it in independent candidates?
I think it's finding it within different factions of the major political parties. I think that the political parties in Missouri are so strong and so well established that people with differing views from the mainstream of each of the parties, I think that they try to work within the parties in order to get their policies to the forefront. And sometimes it can be successful. I mean, if you ask like Republican legislators in the Missouri House and to some extent in the Missouri Senate what their thoughts are on, for example, legalizing medical marijuana now, you're going to find a lot of Republicans that support that. And I guarantee you that through the work of libertarian and libertarian-leaning activists within the Republican Party allowed that position to become more normalized than it was 5, 10, 15 years ago. I think that's kind of the way Missouri activists that may not be in the mainstream get things done. They work within the party and they try to convince the leadership within their party to adopt some of their key planks, and sometimes they can be quite successful at it.
So, John Aldrich, I know you're not a political consultant, you're a political scientist, but I want you to put on that consultant hat. If you were devising a strategy for how a so-called third party, maybe this party of the center in Kansas or even one of the third parties we already know, if how they would become a bigger player in national politics, how they would maybe even become one of the top two parties, what would be the game plan you would write out for them? What would they have to do to make that shift happen?
So I think there's a twofold strategy they have to follow. First, they need somebody, somebody with lots of money to be able to fund them, and especially to get somebody with the charisma and the money to be elected to something like a governor, a senator, or possibly president, to give a beacon of hope. The second strategy, though, which is the hard part, is to build from the grassroots up. You've got to get candidates to run for school board, for town mayors, for city councils, and you've got to get lots of them. So that's why you need the money to go along with some kind of a charismatic attraction candidate.
Jim McLean, this party of the center in Kansas, mm-hmm. they've talked about the possibility of endorsing a candidate for governor. What else is in their game plan?
Well, it's interesting that John should say that. I think that you have both. He has a twofold strategy. We have that twofold strategy, but it's you have different people pursuing each one of them, and they're not doing it. They're doing it concurrently, but not together. Greg Orman is the perceived candidate with a lot of money and perhaps enough charisma to be viable in an election campaign. The party of the center is taking that grassroots, build it from the ground up approach, and that's by design. That's the way Scott Morgan says. That's the only way to make it sustainable. I think I don't think they're going to start at the school board or the city council level. Those races in Kansas are not partisan. But I do think that their emphasis this year, should they get the party registered in Kansas, that requires the signatures of 18,000 registered voters. Should they get that done, their focus is going to be on state house races.
Which has often been the training ground or the cultivating ground.
Create a bench, right. And I think John's exactly right. They want to have – it'll be very interesting to see if any established Republicans and or Democrats leave their respective parties and run on the party of the center ticket should they gain ballot access.
Jason Rosenbaum, St. Louis Public Radio, you're a pretty astute observer of politics, not just in Missouri but all over the country. From what you're seeing, do you think 2018 is going to be – any different than it has been in the past for candidates of an independent or a third party persuasion? Do you think there's a chance of success for any of these candidates? Is there something different about this moment in politics?
I don't think so. And I agree with the other guests that the way that an independent candidate gains traction in a lot of these races is money. I wish that wasn't the case, but especially when you're talking about statewide races, which absolutely require tens of millions of dollars in order to win, because television and radio stations, as far as I know, are still charging people to run ads. So you need a lot of money in order to get your name across. And if people don't even know that you're running for something, then your chances of making a significant impact are pretty low. That's why I mentioned that this Odeer example in the U.S. Senate race will only matter to the outcome if he is willing to put in a significant amount of his own money to break through what is expected to be a deluge from Claire McCaskill and most likely Josh Hawley. So It really just depends on the situation. I think independents can break through in very Republican or very Democratic areas where they don't get the nomination somehow. But statewide, it would require somebody who's putting in tens of millions of dollars of their own money. And in Missouri, that just hasn't happened.
John Aldrich, outside of Missouri and Kansas, can you see anywhere where independents have a chance of breaking through in a way they haven't in the past?
It's so very difficult. It's also really late for this year. People have had to, in many states, people have already had to register for candidacy. And so they've already had to make those decisions and often got on the ballot and have the money and all this stuff already. So it's going to be very difficult this year.
That's John Aldrich. He's a political scientist at Duke University. He joined us by Skype. Jason Rosenbaum covers politics and government for St. Louis Public Radio. And Jim McLean, managing director of the Kansas News Service here at KCUR. Thanks to all of you for being with us.
Well, thank you, Brian.
Thank you.
You can listen back to anything you've heard or missed on this show at kcur.org/centralstandard. Be sure and check out our conversation about women in Kansas City's tech scene. If you didn't get to hear it, you can hear it at kcur.org/centralstandard. Tomorrow, we'll celebrate Frankenstein's 200th anniversary, that's right, by looking back at the scientific breakthroughs that inspired Mary Shelley's classic novel in the first place. Don't want to miss that. Don't forget to check out KCUR's new podcast, Midwesternish. It's hosted by Gina Kaufman. You can subscribe on iTunes or Google Play. Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton, Sylvia Maria Gross, Jen Chen, Coy Duggar, and Suzanne Hogan, with help from intern Matt Groby. Gina Kaufman will be back in this chair tomorrow. I'm Brian Ellison. Stick around now for Up to Date.